the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys, all of them.
Hey, girls.
And ladies.
That's right.
Ladies.
That's right. Well,
that's me.
I was going to add that. First of all, over here on my right, we've got sound designer extraordinaire, Scott Gershon.
Hi, Mike.
And
hi, Mike.
And next to him, we have Forrest Robinson, drummer extraordinaire.
Hello.
And next to him, we have our good friend, composer, Brandon Birdside.
Hello.
And next to him, we've got Bill. Bill, what's your last name again? No. Bill Burgess, composer, songwriter, guru of all MIDI. And next to him, we've got Bobby Summerfield.
I'm just waiting for you to give me a title.
Wanko,
I know.
I wasn't going to say anything.
Wanko, that's about right. That sums me up.
No, we've got the amazing Bobby Summerfield,
yes.
The human encyclopedia of all things analog and digital. And followed by The Rock, The Anchor, the one and only, the truly amazing Rob Arbatier.
Hello, hello. I want to be something extraordinaire, though.
Engineer extraordinaire?
Guy who has nowhere else to be extraordinaire.
Yes, because this is show number 77. We're counting Rob's streak.
All right.
I'm feeling so old.
Well, hey, guys. This is our last show of the year. And
promise?
Yes, I do promise. Yeah. And we actually have two guests with us today. And let me introduce them. The first one, we have recording artist Alexia. She
Hello.
Has joined us.
Hello.
And just
Hello.
A little.
So far, so good.
A little trivia. Apparently, her and Scott used to be in a band like 3 years ago.
Is that what they call it now?
The Phoenix Project.
The Phoenix Project, yeah.
And our other guest is a friend of Bobby, and that should say a lot right there. But Keith Hutchinson from South Africa, who's a composer, is joining us today also. Welcome, Keith.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us on our show. Now, this podcast is going to be a little different because this is going to be kind of like an open mic night. So I'm going to get it started with a couple topics that we can start with and we'll build from here.
Which I'm sure we'll know a lot about.
Absolutely.
Well, here's something that I want to give. It's a hint. And sometimes you have to, before you go forward, you just have to stop and maybe go backwards a little bit and take another look at things. I'm going to give you a good example. I was working on a mix today and I had some VO that was sent to me that was the client wanted it processed and wanted it, you know, pitch shifted and some things to happen to it. And I tried to put it in a mix and it just did not work. It didn't sound good at all. So finally I went and I asked him, hey, can I hear the original files? I went and I heard the original files and all I needed was a little EQing, a little tweaking. And so I brought in the original files. I tweaked them. I EQed them. And sure enough, boom, they laid into the mix. It worked really fine. And I just think that's, you know, if you're ever struggling with a mix and you're ever out there and you're trying to figure out how can I get this, how can I make this sound good? How can I make it pop? You know, sometimes your best option is just stop, go back a couple steps, and then move forward. Rob, you ever come into a situation where you do that? Where you
have to just, happens all the time.
We have to just go back and...
Yeah, I mean, like with every singer we ever work with, we always record the very first practice pass because you always end up going back to that, at least for part of a performance. Because when you do something for the first time, you're not used to it yet. So you're going to be spontaneous. You're going to maybe try some things, whether you do it intentionally or by accident. A lot of times that's when your best ideas happen.
I find technology also plays a real big role in giving you almost too many options. And sometimes you're trying to tweak it or trying to force in that
You start
plugin.
Thinking about it too
yeah,
much.
You start.
One of my favorite features in Cubase as a sequencer, they have a thing called retrospective record, which is if you just have the sequencer playing and you're playing along with it on a MIDI keyboard or whatever, and then you decide, oh, you know what? I just played something great, but I forgot to record it. If you hit shift on the record key, it goes back and it actually has recorded it.
Wow.
It's a great feature.
Scott, in sound design, do you ever find that, you know, you try to go for a super razzy sound effect and next thing you know it, you're going back to a simpler sound or
it's funny that you mentioned that, Mike. Because, this is what I've been doing for the last month. I'm working on a movie right now that we have a character that changes forms, and they wanted to change the voice up. So we have been, it's basically Season of the Witch. We have the witch, and now we're trying to have the witch turn into something else. And the first thing is, I think, is, I hate to say it, but it's crap in, crap out.
Right.
And it's all about the performance. So I can't tell you how many times I've been given dialogue or vocals of some sort, and then they said, can you make it better? And I've done it, and I can make it sound better than it was, but I can never make it sound great. So it really comes down to getting the performer to come in, do the best performance they can, and then let me enhance it. So we've gone through probably 60 different actors, male, female, just going through all these different people, because at one point we started going for Darth Vader with a smoking habit.
Yes, I speak like this.
You know, and then, you know, you're the demonic voice like this. And all of a sudden, yeah, the producer's like, yeah, I heard it. It's in all the movies. It's very predictable. Heard it. So then we start going for the Gollum voice, which really high like that. And start going for the Gollum stuff. And like, yeah, it's in Gollum. So now we want to do something else. So what I had to do was to create a voice that kept going between male and female. So it was kind of fun because what I ended up doing was playing with formants. So as they were talking, the formants would constantly change with pitch. So it was all over the place to sound like nothing anybody would ever sound like.
That's cool.
Yeah. So it was at the end, because, you know, and you got a day. So it's never like take the month to figure it out. It's, you know, what can you come up with? We'll see you tomorrow. And then you're like, okay. But, you know, it's going for the right actor. And we finally landed on an actress who wasn't that great performing, but it was amazing because usually I don't like to pitch women down.
You're speaking like this, you know,
and it just doesn't sound right. So anyway, there you go.
Mike, though, just go back to your point. You said that the client asked you to tweak the vocal. Is that right?
The client
said, put this on it, put that on it.
Well, basically, the producer didn't know how to fix it, left it kind of up to the client, and the client thought it actually needed to be pitched up.
Because I think the point I was going to say is I have the same experience, but generally I think a lesson to learn from it is, of course, we will have to go back and do things again many times when we screw up, we don't get it right, we don't like what we're doing, but lots of times interpreting what the client is asking for, but not do exactly what the client's asking for.
Absolutely.
Like, give me what I want, not what I ask for.
Right, exactly. Because otherwise you
always.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. It's between the lines.
That was totally.
Just ignore them completely, I think, is the best thing.
Well, you know what I find with the clients, though, is instead of asking them, what do you want me to do?
Yeah, tell them what
I ask them,
options.
What do you want me to accomplish? What do you want out of this? Do you want it to be spooky? Do you want it to be loving? What do you want to accomplish? And then let me take my artistic tools and my common sense and to create that.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, because they don't know the lingo, and they don't know what they want. And really, what they wanted was they wanted this re-EQ. They didn't want it pitch up. They wanted to get rid of all the low end.
I mean, how many times have you, as a mixer, they go, "Oh my God, it's too low. It's too loud," and it's really a dB off. Oh. It's just like a little. Oh, much better. Okay. But they don't know that everything's huge.
Yeah, that's true.
Of course, I'm going to say when I used to mix, I used to have a producer channel. And used to come in and say, you balance the vocal. Here we go, ready? I punch and record, going to record on the SSL, and they would sit there and tweak away, and the thing is not even connected.
Yeah.
And come back, and the slider used to move, but it wasn't nothing was going through. And to watch the slider with the guy. It's much better.
That's like the 4Q2 knob.
Have you ever been in a session where you've gone down vocally a certain performance and at the end you've just had to like stop and just throw away what you've heard and just try it again and you end up with something golden?
Absolutely, yes. Because everything is new to me. I've been here for a month and a half and everything is new to me, so everything was like I'm trying to understand. Okay, yes, I did. You know, when I really found my voice and I did my first take and a take to keep, so when I stopped I left from there. I've been singing in Greece for 18 years. I have about 18 albums. But around 2000, I decided to stop everything and just to start composing. And then, to make a long story short, I started doing voice improvisations and recording in empty rooms in nature. I did voice in wind. Everything became music after I left from the... So after I explored this possibility... The improvisation without any purpose, just the only purpose would be to enjoy music. Then I was able to do one take, I mean, on difficult songs, and I actually liked my voice.
Wow.
After. Did this answer your question?
No, but actually that's, no, the, yeah, that did. It answered it exactly.
Did you ask me something else?
No.
I'm sorry.
No. It was... That was that's like stepping back in your career and
well,
and
that's
going,
really stepping back. Yeah, it's not I mean, just stepping back to 12 noon. It's stepping back to what got you into the thing in the first place.
No, that's
music.
That's great.
Music, exactly.
Because it kind of tends to get lost in business.
We were talking about that at dinner where a lot of times we all went in with dreams of a musical style that we loved, and then we had the realization that if we want to use this as a career, we have to become commercial musicians or commercial audio artists, and it's not as much about what you want to do, it's about what either the audience wants to hear or what a client wants you to write. Mm-hmm. And it's great when you get the opportunity to stop, think about why you got into this business in the first place, and then start experimenting with those things that you love, whether they're commercial or not, and to stop being a commercial artist and do some art. Whatever you consider art to be, and it's always kind of fun to experiment.
You know, you brought up a great topic. I'm gonna ask everybody because I think it's pretty appropriate. And since we don't really have a schedule on this one, I want to know, Rob. We'll start with you. What was your musical dream when you were younger, and how close did you get to achieving that?
Well, it sounds funny to say it, but. When I was a little kid, all I listened to was Motown, and from age two or three, all I listened to was Stevie Wonder and the Supremes. So all I ever wanted to do was, like, meet Stevie Wonder or the Supremes. And so I ended up doing that, and that's one of the reasons I had permission from my parents to drop out of college to move out here to meet Stevie. I mean, ever since I was a little kid, that was my entire life. So, you know, fast forward to when I'm... Was I 21 years old,
right.
And had a chance to actually live that? It was such a natural thing. I mean, my parents are very education oriented, but it was just such a natural progression for me to move into the Motown world that they said, "Yeah, go for it."
That's great.
Plus, I had five brothers and sisters who all finished college and had nice, normal careers. But so, yeah, for me, all I ever wanted to do was live in Motown.
So Rob's living the dream. Bobby,
living the dream.
What about you? What was your musical dream growing up?
It's kind of a personal question for me, I'll be honest. It's quite sad. I really wanted to be a lumberjack.
And that's okay.
It's like a Monty Python sketch.
I was going to wind you up, but I can't. Actually, I wanted to be an actor. I wanted to I didn't really want to. I like music. I love music. And I was a DJ. So.
Right. And when it came to acting, you were quite the lumberjack.
I was doing a kind of music, too. Oh, yeah. So that's it. Yeah, really.
So you wanted to be an actor and you ended up working in music.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so we got one hit and one miss. Keith, what about you? You know, you're a composer. When you were young, was that your dream to be a composer? Did you want to be a lumberjack?
I had no idea when I was young. I started with classical piano and then in my teens, got into bands, and you think you're going to be a big star in a band,
right.
That doesn't happen, So you land up like all the guys around the table doing, commercial type work,
What would you like to do if you could make money doing
anything? I put aside everything in the last couple of years for something called Q444, a quadrilogy, which is 4 hours, 44 minutes for orchestra, choir, band, machines, kitchen, sink, everything that goes in there. And I'm still working on it. It's almost there. It's heading for final mix now, So it's all very exciting. It's about global warming and climate change. And I was looking at Virgin Unite, one of Branson's sites, and he wrote there, "Do something that you can do and make a difference." And I was sitting in my studio in Johannesburg looking at this and thinking, well, what do? Run off into deepest, darkest Africa and sort of convert some pygmies or something like that, I'll write music, and I'm sitting on a monster here, so get this finished and get it out there and contribute to making an improved world, I hope.
Wow, that's great.
So that's where I'm at, yeah.
Wow. Bill, what was your dream, and did you?
Well, you know, my dream is still some 20 some years out. Actually, I grew up the son of an artist, an abstract sculptor, and I initially got into music because I'd showed much distraction for everything else, and I won a contest, a hearing contest. You know, this guy's, you know, he's scored the best in the state. So they said, well, you do something, you know, stop bothering us. And so they let me, I picked the drums. But I started because of the thrill of just hearing a smacking pocket, just drums. And I started there. But my dream is actually to see a full multimedia, like 6-7 guys on laptops improvising video and music at the same time, with the ability of like a Miles Davis quartet, like being Herbie Hancock, but with visuals, live video, live audio, improvised, and multiple screens, multiple speakers.
Wow.
And doing just like this stunning piece of everything. Mm. It's story, it's movie, it's telephone rings. But, you know, but that. So I've been in the awkward position of having, you know, when I first wanted this, it was, hey, let's put a slide projector over the drummer's head.
Right.
But then I saw Laurie Anderson.
Right.
And so I'm still looking for this. And so every decision that I make in the industry is about mixing improvised music, drums, because I love drums, but music with live video, live text, live graphics, live drama.
It's, you know, it's getting close though. It's getting with some of the VJ software out there, and
every day
it's getting live and live talking to Max and Jenner. It's getting close.
Yeah. Yeah. So I still got a dream.
I volunteer for that band. Brandon.
Yes.
What about you? What about your musical dreams when you were younger? And
well, I wanted to be John Bonham for a few years. I started drums when I was 10 and just played along to Led Zeppelin forever. But music wasn't really presented as a career. So I went to school, got a marketing degree, and it wasn't until a few years out of college that I was like, you know, this hobby is something I want to do. You know, I've been experimenting with recording at home and whatnot, and was just like, screw it, I'm coming out to L.A. to get a band going, be a rock star. And a few years later, I realized very quickly that, you know, you can't just be a guy with a song or, you know, a good instrumentalist or a vocalist or whatever. You have to be, you know, because the music industry is changing, you have to be able to do this all yourself. And so I got more into production and learned a few pieces of software. And then things sort of fell together. And I'm in this sound design job now and composing and doing this. But I guess, I don't know if the dream was always just to, you know, make a living making music, you know, it's there, you know, it's happening. But I think there's, you know, actually what you were saying, I have some stuff in mind to do as well. I want to see, you know, sort of visuals and music coming together. It's more about the spectacle, the overall, just something that can really draw the listener, the observer in.
Right.
You know, and just creating something that completely blows their mind on all levels.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah, that's sort of the end goal.
That's cool. Brandon, meet Bill. Bill,
yes.
Meet Brandon.
We're going
to talk more. Forrest, what about you? Dreams when you were younger?
Well, quite honestly, I knew when I was 4 years old what I wanted to be. I knew I wanted to be a musician.
Wow.
No doubt in my mind, I fully believe that's why God put me here. I believe that more now than ever. I also, the other things I wanted to be in the midst of that, I wanted to be the next Pele.
Dude, come and play football with us.
I would love to. I mean, I got, you know, that, I wanted to be a forest ranger.
I wanted to be
forest,
a race car.
The
a forest
ranger.
Go figure.
The forest Robinson ranger.
And then by the time I hit like, you know, 12 or 13, I wanted to dance with Garth Fagan's dance company in, you know, New York or something like that. But I always knew that I wanted to be a musician. And I guess it was probably around as early as 2 years old. I felt like I heard this music that I believed was from heaven, which was sort of a revelation. I talked to a very good friend of mine and my biggest music inspiration on the planet, William Ackerman, who started the Windham Hill label in 1974. And I felt like I heard this music 2 years before he formed that label, which was, it was pretty, it was like a revelation to me. And I felt totally drawn to like the sounds of acoustic guitar, piano, and drums came about. I'm still not quite sure how that happened. I guess what I recently decided was maybe drums for me happened besides loving the sound, loving the motion. It was a way for me to enjoy being in the midst of the most incredible musicians without stepping on their toes. You know, if I'm playing drums and if I can interact with these brilliant artists, then, you know, it's, you know, 10 times better than just being able to listen to it and enjoy it, you know, that way. And then I grew up listening to everyone from the Shy Lights to Fats Domino to Rick James to Shalimar to Chic to Tina Marie, and, you know, growing up playing gospel, you know, rhythm and blues and blues in Memphis, Tennessee. But when 1982 came around, you know, I was caught hold of by AC/DC, Iron Maiden, Judas Priest. And one night I was watching MTV when it was music television at that time. And they were showing an Ozzy concert, you know, it was Speak of the Devil tour, you know, from the Diary of a Madman album. Lo and behold, Tommy Aldridge was on drums. And that was like, okay, I need to get a bass drum for my left foot. And I want to become a beast. I don't want to just play. I need to become a freaking beast on drums. And and that's where I've been.
And you scored.
I'm trying. Yeah. Well, I mean, there are still things I would like to accomplish musically, but really, as of yet, I really don't have words. I think I'll think that I do, but my love for music was pre-MTV. It was before I knew anything about the music business, and I was playing with guys 30, 40, and 50 years my age, my senior, playing blues. And that was something too deeply felt that I really, to this day, I have no words to convey. Wow. Whatever it is I'm trying to accomplish. So, but I play Madison Square Garden and the Hammersmith, so I'm happy about that. Thank you.
Good for you.
Alexia, when you were young, what musical dreams did you have, or did you have any?
May I ask you, why did you say when I was young? Is it the same about friends? You said, but about,
Forrest.
Forrester, you said when you were younger. So I heard that. I'm joking. Actually, what I wanted is to sing. I sang all my life. But I wanted to exchange love. I know it's going to sound boring to you men, but I know. I mean, I didn't mean the bad way. So, okay. I wanted to be able to exchange love through music, to be honest. That's my dream. And to record with Chicoria, which I did, and play with him.
Wow.
And with Mikis Theodorakis, who the composer of Zorba the Greek in Greece. Yep. So, and I'm living my dream. And also I wanted to live in L.A. and work and play with talented people. Because my mind, I mean, I loved my life in Greece, but I had a pull, an attraction to here. And I didn't know, as I was telling you earlier, Bob, I didn't know what I was coming to, but here I am. And thanks for having me here. So my dream is actually fulfilled. So everything else that comes after this, it's more gifts, I'm telling you. Thank you.
Yeah. Well, welcome to L.A. We are glad you're here.
Thank you.
And did you know you were going to end up in a podcast?
I like it, though. I like it very much.
Scott, what about you?
Hello. You know, it's interesting. When I grew up with music all my life, but I listen to it, I think, differently because, strangely enough, when I listen to music, I hate to admit it, but I don't listen to lyrics. I listen to it occasionally.
I'm the same.
But I what happens is I'm attracted to sound. I mean, I can hear an orchestra tune, and it gives me the goosebumps. When I heard symphonies go and soundtracks, and for me, it became like a beacon that I just followed like a moth to light. And anything that sounded interesting, that's why I know Rob and I have lots of discussions, but when I started hearing, you know, the Beatles were doing something that was fine, and I think they're great, but I started hearing Yes, and it was like a Palmer. Yeah. And all of these progressive bands that, to me, was power orchestra, where all of a sudden, I love orchestration, but, you know, when there's a guitar going for the high note at the end of a lick, it would just make me want to start jumping up and down.
And you're right. That is so much better than the crap the Beatles were doing.
No. You know what? I like.
I'm sorry. I have to dive in there.
I thought we were going to defend myself.
Save me.
You know, here it goes. I think a lot of pop music and some great Beatles tunes, but there's some songs that in pop music don't take me anywhere. Mm-hmm. I listen to it, I nod my head, the rhythm's there, yeah. And it kind of stays, it kind of energizes me and it stays in that place, or it's a good ballad, but it doesn't take me anywhere. But when you start hearing, which is why I do film, when you start hearing a film score, and it just, all of a sudden, you can close your eyes and you're now in a different world.
No kidding.
So for me, it's funny what you said about the multimedia. One of the things that I wanted to do, because I was actually a lot of acting as a kid.
Really?
Like theater kid, all the way through to college. I was always on a stage acting. And one of the things I loved when I acted was that I have the ability to make people laugh or cry. And I had the ability to pull their emotional strings. And I thought, this is really cool. Then as a musician, I started realizing you play a minor nine and all of a sudden the orchestra would swell and the lead guitar player, you know, would go up and all of a sudden you'd see people glow and it was just a wonderful feeling to be able to push the emotional buttons of people. So for me, I kind of done that a lot in film, but it would be great to do. I don't think I'd want to be improvised because I'd like to plan it out. But it'd be great to be able to put on a show with music and visuals because I'm very visual oriented, and to take people on a journey, to tell a story,
yes,
whatever story I want to tell. And there's so many great stories to tell,
right.
And maybe that's what attracts me to movies. Is I'm a sucker for a good story. Just take me someplace. Let me forget all the crap that I'm dealing with, and take me, you know, to another land. Star Wars, I was like, that's what got me into it.
Right.
Wow. Well, that's cool. Hey, you know, we need to video podcast again because the people need to see how excited Forrest just got over
a minor
nine. That was sheer joy.
A minor nine is from heaven.
We have to put clothes on.
Hey, Scott, did you listen to Gentle Giant?
Did you say something?
That's so funny.
Or did that just come out of the blue? Did you say that? He said, made the exact same remark this night. He goes, "Do you listen to Gentle Giant?"
Because I mean, I love them.
But
not many. But that was like one step removed from Yes, and Emerson, Lake and Palmer was Gentle Giant.
Wow. Which is all the progressive, any band that takes me to a place that's just interesting. That's why I also like jazz too.
Well,
I was a Beatles fan, I have to say. Unfortunately, I was a sucker.
I got a question,
yeah,
Mike.
We have two distinct sides of the table here. But
and they're all literally on the different sides of the table.
Yeah, but this side of the table is still sitting here in stunned disbelief. So
my question is, what three records changed your musical life?
That's a good one.
That's a good one.
I would love that question.
You know Mike, why don't you start, Mike, since you didn't get a chance, you know.
Here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna pick that up on the other side of the break because that's a great one and it'll give me a chance to figure them out. But really quick, before we go, I just want to tell you, I'm gonna answer the question that I asked everybody.
Yeah, that's
when I was a kid, the only thing I wanted to do for the longest time was to be on a tour bus. That was like my ultimate goal. Because if you were on a tour bus,
did you ever do it?
Well, yeah. Because when you're on a tour bus, you were like involved with music,
and I
just wanted to be involved with music, and I thought I was going to be a player, and then I got to a certain point where I realized I really sucked, and so I went to backline, and I'll never forget my very first time I walked on a tour bus. Everybody else was like, yeah, you know, it's another day at the office. I was almost in tears because
I'm walking
on the bus, the bus pulls up, and I'm sitting there, I can't wait, and it's an Eagle bus, it pulls up, I was in Toronto.
How many girls were on the bus?
I was on a striper tour.
Oh. I was a drum tech for Against the Law
Drum Tech for Bob Sweet.
Robert Sweet.
And the bus pulls pulls up, and I floated onto the bus. It was like I was so excited, and the fact that they gave me, you know, everybody gets their own key, and you can get on the bus, and it's exactly, they park the bus at the venue, and you can get on the bus. Literally, I probably just sat on that bus for like 3 hours. Right as soon as
Wicked.
I set up,
awesome.
I went back into the bus, and I was just sitting there, and I was like, and you know, and I got to pick the bunk last because I was the new guy, right?
So everybody else,
I didn't care. I would have slept in the hood, you know. I was just so glad. But that was like, to me, that was like one of those moments that was like, wow. And then, you know, my life's gone downhill after that. No, just kidding. All right, well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to answer Bill's question. That's a fantastic question. All right, so we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to Audio Nowcast. And before the break, Bill came up with a fantastic question. And why don't you ask it one more time, Bill?
What three records changed your musical direction? I want to say four. But four. Let's just keep it at three.
What
for me? Like, because you know, when you're moving along in your career,
right?
And we've all heard some records that just turned it, like it's literally a fork in the road. And what three records would those be?
That's a tough question. Changed.
Hard, yeah.
I'll start it off. I'll answer that one. And because for me, it's relatively easy. I think the very first one I'd have to say was, and you guys are going to laugh because you'll laugh at all of them, is Saga, Worlds Apart.
Oh, yeah. On the loose.
That, exactly.
Yeah.
The reason why is because they did stuff with keyboards back then that just inspired me to seek new sounds and the whole synth thing on a level that I just hadn't heard before. And it actually got me into listening to more synth-oriented music and actually probably started me down – I really love electronica, and it just started me down that route.
The other, you like Larry Fast?
I didn't know. Okay, the other one I would say a little bit more recent was I liked Daft Punk Discovery. Mm. I just thought that was just a brilliant album. It just the fact that they mixed there's a little bit of flavors of the old with the new technology and a little bit of rock and roll grit in there. And then, if we step back, I would say the Beatles really were a big influence on me because of just pure, you know, enjoying songwriting and enjoying taking any of their albums. And for me, the one album is I had the blue album. You had the blue and the red of the greatest hits. Those were probably two of my first cassettes that I ever bought when I was a kid. And to me, that totally changed, you know, the direction of where I was going in music. Forrest, what about you?
There are a lot of records that changed my life, but if I had to name three, from growing up and, you know, on all the funk and everything like that, one record that definitely did was Motley Crue's Shout at the Devil record. I think that was around 82. And I don't know, it just amped everything. It took drums for me, being a drummer, a musician. It took it from me just merely existing in a band to like really wanting to just do the thing on stage, really brought up the whole showmanship thing. Another record that, you know, even before that, that really inspired me. No, this is a little later. Kate Bush, Hounds of Love.
Yes.
I wept to that record probably every night for 3 years. And the minor nine happened to come to life. And then found out years later that she was actually committed shortly after making that record.
Wow.
So as far as I'm concerned, she was getting something out on that record, and it hit me. It was that album was a blessing. Let me see. There are many others. Let me see. One, I'm going to have to choose one more. 1980... 3, I think. I remember saving up lunch money for a week. And I went to the Southland Mall in Memphis, Tennessee on Elvis Presley Boulevard, walked from my junior high school over to across what would later be my high school to Southland Mall and bought Journey's Frontiers record. Mm-hmm. I went home and from cover to cover learned every single note Steve Smith played on that record, and I did not leave the room, had no dinner, didn't go to the bathroom, had no water until I finished learning every song on that record. And to this day, I can air drum the crap out of that record. I could do a whole concert on Journey Frontiers.
No drinks of water?
No, I just sat in there. You know. But anyway,
that's great.
Three of many. But there you go.
Keith, yeah. What about you? What about you?
I think it was 1966. Walked into a store in a small town in South Africa called Springs, and there was the racks of albums, not CDs, albums, vinyl, and there was one there was Sgt. Pepper's. That was the album at that time, you know. The other was a pink album with a black stripe, and it said, "Are you experienced?"
Oh,
yeah. I said, "Please put this on." And I mean, I've already into Purple Haze, and then I heard this, that trill, you know. Thank you. I'll take that. Foxy Lady. That changed my life. Hendrix.
Yeah.
Wow.
Then I guess the next step was Keith Emerson, that first album. After, it was Emerson, Lake and Palmer.
Yeah. Wow. You know?
But then the big one was In a Mounting Flame with John McLaughlin.
Yeah.
You know. All that stuff. Oh, it was brilliant, man.
Wow.
I loved it to bits. Still do.
Wow. That's great. Bobby?
It's so unfair to say just three, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
It is.
Yeah, what about your career?
The tough thing is you said that changed, actually changed your mind, at least, let's say. I think when I was a kid, I was a DJ. I was 14. I was a professional DJ, literally proper DJ, playing dance music pretty much, and I loved R&B and funk. I really loved it, but you know, generally the R&B and funk was had its own vibe that I had to play for a club, and I started getting into other styles of music. And I think one of them was Electric Light Orchestra, which
absolutely,
because I loved the Beatles, but they were like a modern version of the Beatles. Rumours, Fleetwood Mac, just scary,
very nice.
Yep.
And then a little later on, and I just can't leave this one off, which is of the same ilk, though.
Basically,
my favorite album. You guessed, ABBA. No, I'm kidding. Whereas, the album's called I Am. It's my favorite single record still today.
Oh.
Ghost Within Fire's I Am album.
Yeah.
So I think it's got the best combination of production, sonic, just magic. So that, you know, they're three. I mean, of course, there's hundreds. Well,
yeah. Yeah, dude, you blessed me with that one.
You re-blessed
me with that one. So I've forgotten all about that record.
That thing just...
Not anymore!
Is that the one you're
dancing naked to this morning?
Bless
your life.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
Brandon, what about you?
This is a tough question, man. There's so many different... I've taken so many turns musically in my life, but the first album I ever bought was Michael Jackson's Thriller.
Oh, yeah.
I saved up my $8 or $9 and took it to the little record store. Actually bought... It was the first and only real album I ever bought. And then it was tapes and CDs. But that one definitely had a big impact. And, you know, now... knowing that is just impeccably produced and incredible as an adult is pretty cool. Then after that, I don't know which album it was, but Led Zeppelin, because I didn't get those on tapes or actual albums. My uncle had been in the Peace Corps in the Philippines and at some point came back with like the earliest form of music pirating. They had a record store. You'd go into, they had records, but they convert it to a tape for you. So he had like... these tapes I got, we didn't have tapes here until like the 80s. These are like tapes, you know, cassette tapes that were like antiques by the time they got to me in the, you know, mid 80s. And so I got this huge collection that he left with my parents of Led Zeppelin tapes. And I just dug into that, and that was really cool. And then I guess after that, then the Beatles. Really dug into the Beatles and really got me into songwriting and
great.
All that stuff. So, yeah.
Scott.
Ah, okay. I've got a couple band/songs?
We said three, though.
when I was a young boy. There's a couple different ones, and I'll go through them really quick, because they were pivotal for me. The first two was Stairway to Heaven by Led Zeppelin and Fragile, Roundabout by Yes.
Yeah.
I heard those two. I was starting to be a drummer, and then all of a sudden, when I heard Stairway to Heaven, I went, I got to learn how to play that on the guitar. That is the coolest thing.
Steve Howe got you.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Pink Floyd, The Wall.
Yeah.
I just heard that, and it took me places that I just love. I love what Pink Floyd, it makes me very creative, and I sometimes put it when I'm editing on it, and it puts me in a place. But then I kind of took a curve, and I heard Fade by Earth, Wind, and Fire, and it took me to another place, because I love rhythm. And I don't know why, but just that song really stuck. And then the last one, strangely enough, was the soundtrack to Glory.
Oh, yeah.
By James Newton Howard. I heard
absolutely.
That. If I see it on TV, I don't care about the visual. I turn the movie on, and I just listen to the music.
Absolutely.
Because it just makes me very emotional.
That's a great that. Yeah, I totally agree on that
one. Harlem
that's
Boys awesome. Choir yeah. going, there's nothing yeah. better.
Especially the music over the end of that thing, man.
Oh, yeah, when they're attacking and the boys are singing, it's a dichotomy. Oh, it just gives you the goosebumps.
Yeah. And if I could cry, I would.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. You can cry, brother.
No, I'm just kidding. Rob.
Yes, buddy.
Three albums, Rob.
I've been thinking how I was going to address this because during all those formidable years, like in high school and, end of high school and the beginning of MTV and all that stuff. With the exception of Too Much Time on My Hands from Styx and...
Wait, hold on. Styx was pivotal for
no,
you?
No, hold on. Let me say this. With the exception of Too Much Time on My Hands from Styx and Owner of a Lonely Heart from Yes... I can say that I singularly hated every single piece of music that Scott liked. I thought that progressive rock was absolute crap, and I still do. I have no interest.
They ain't got no rock.
I have no interest in any of the simplistic gymnastic crap that groups like Rush and Journey were dishing out. I thought it was ridiculous, horrible stuff that sounded like exercises and had no emotional content whatsoever. Now.
Okay.
All right. Okay.
I wanted to get that out there because that side of the table has been very well represented.
I've got to say I'm backing him up 100%.
But it's like two against 50 here. Let me tell you what I actually did like. When I was a kid, I started, like Keith did, I started on classical piano at an early age. And for a long time, I thought I was going to go to Juilliard and just take the classical piano route. And then at some point, I realized I'd probably starve to death if I tried to do that. But that was the plan. But when I was, I had been listening to Stevie and Motown from when I was a little tiny kid, but I never thought that was going to be a career. I never even thought I was going to go into music. But when I heard Songs in the Key of Life, which came out...
Yeah. Was that like 76,
I think?
76, 77.
And I heard that, and here's this double album... And every single song on it.
Every song was a gem.
It was amazing.
I'm sorry.
So
your question.
It was. But that was an album that I just played to the point where I had to buy another copy. You know, I played it till it was just blank.
Wow.
So that was one. And then I'd reiterate a lot of what people were hit by, you know, Beatles and Earth, Wind, and Fire and all that stuff. But I'll mention two other albums. Actually, Dark Side of the Moon.
Yeah.
Because it made me realize that sound design... and music could work together. Yeah, but Scott,
so welcome to the dark side.
Yeah, but if you like Rush, you're disqualified from liking Dark Side of the Moon.
Double
I think
back.
If you like Rush, you're disqualified.
By the way, this is not a new argument. Scott and I have been having this argument for close to 20 years. So it feels like a well-worn glove at this point. But
smell the glove.
The other one.
See, I like all the music he likes, and he hates all the music I like.
Oh man,
not entirely.
But he likes good music. I gotta back you up on this. That's
okay, me. So the other thing is, no one's mentioned Steely Dan tonight.
That's true.
But musically, just
four
their
chords.
Chord changes and stuff, their chords were off the charts, more complex and interesting, but they managed to use them in a way that told a story, and it wasn't just for the sake of, look, Mom, I know some complicated chords, like some of these other crap bands were. I will say that Donald Fagen's Nightfly album, even more than most of the Steely Dan stuff, for some reason that album just hit me at a certain time. And songs like New Frontier.
That's because every house engineer tunes the PA to that.
Well, it's the best sounding stuff ever.
Yeah.
It just sounds so good. And obviously Seal's song, Crazy, I think more studios have been tuned to that song probably than any other song in history. But there was something about New Frontier and the Donald Fagen Nightfly album that was just unbelievable. And that one, I just about wore out the CD I listened to it that much.
Wow.
That was an awesome album.
Amazing.
Alexia.
Oh, I feel so much better.
Alexia, how are you going to follow that up?
Okay, now, when I was in high school, just finishing high school.
That was last year, by the way, for Mike.
When she was younger.
Younger.
Okay, there was a guy, a cousin of a classmate of mine, who used to knock on my door. My mother and I would open the door. He would always look very awkward, and he was sweating. He would always give me information that would change my life. And then he would leave. He wouldn't even come in. His name is Nikos. I thanked him in my jazz album 18 years later. So he took me to a Hindu teacher who used to play keyboards in a hotel in Limassol, Cyprus, where I was born. And I started taking lessons with Ivan, his name was. Yes. And he gave me a cassette, which I always have with me. And he introduced me to Miles Davis, Oscar Peterson, Astrid Gilberto, Felicia Sanders, Ella Fitzgerald, Sarah Vaughan, Billie Holiday. I had no idea. I hadn't heard these people before.
All which Rob hates.
No, I love
all of them. Oh, yeah.
Those are the classics.
Yeah.
So that was, it wasn't an album. It was a cassette.
Yeah.
And so that was, that changed my life and made me, you know, led me to Berkeley. And then Chick Corea, of course, Leprechaun. Chick Corea said Leprechaun. And Kind of Blue, Miles Davis. Mm-hmm. And when I was in high school, A Star is Born by Barbara Streisand. Mm-hmm. I said four.
That's
Sorry.
Okay.
And there's
we'll
so many
That's
more,
a...
but I won't.
It's there.
Oh,
it's an
error. Those
Elaborate.
Are all good. Those are
great ones. Yeah.
Oh, Stevie Wonder. The Secret Life of Plants.
Yeah.
That's a song.
I miss records where every song was.
Yes.
I just miss records.
It was like a revelation. Every song was.
I tell you something.
I just want to get Bill in really quick before
Bill
we.
In,
before
of
we,
course, he asked the question. Go for it. Absolutely.
Bill.
Well, so my first vinyl I ever bought was Dark Side of the Moon.
Nice.
And, but this led me to a long period of just rock, right? I bought Omagoma and all the stuff that they did. And then it was Yes and all the stuff. And then right around senior year in high school, I just was bored. I walked into the record store in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and I said, I'm bored, to the guy. I'm bored. What's new? And he had just long hair down to his butt. Didn't say a word, just looked at me, and, you know, he's wasted probably. But he just handed me the first Return to Forever record.
Oh, yeah.
And it was Lenny White, yeah. Stanley Clarke,
there it is.
Chick Corea,
yeah.
and Di Meola.
Yeah.
No, it was pre-Di Meola, maybe.
Was that Where Have I...
It was a pink cover and, Lenny White. So I actually, my band broke up over that record. because I said, you guys want something new, check this out. And it was funk. And I just went, oh, it just blew my mind. Because it wasn't straight eights, it was funk. And my band broke up instantly, and I was kicked out. You know.
That's horrible.
Because they were playing Motel tunes, and you wanted something better.
Well, but no, it just was just like, they just couldn't go there. But I made a whole new set of friends that went right there with me. And that ended up getting stolen, that record. And because I had it on record and cassette. Then that led me down this whole, another awesome journey of Chick, and then Herbie, and then Miles, and then I mean, all the way down. And there was a period where I was listening to Ed Blackwell and just, I mean, the purest bop ever, just straight bebop. And that led me to Berkeley. And I was, actually, that's not quite right. I was just so, I was a bop snob. It was Love Supreme, John Coltrane, that's it. Just bebop. And then I heard My Life in the Bush of Ghosts by David Byrne and Brian Eno. And that just knocked me down because, you know, it's funk, but they were using radio voices. Yeah. And then just, and so this led me down this whole other 10-year odyssey of sound collage. Right. Hmm. Wow. And radio voices and cut-up stuff and Xenakis and Verez, all of that. And so that changed me big time. And then, you know, that was a long journey into deep space, actually, which was great.
Sound collage.
Yeah, everything. But, I mean, that record still holds up, actually. And then I have to say that it was probably Peter Gabriel's So.
That's what I was saying.
Yeah.
Gabriel, that would have been my fourth Gabriel record. And Genesis.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because I'd always followed them, but then he comes out with that record, and I'm like, you know, like I was, my faith in the pop song was restored, like the song, not a, you know, whatever, but the song, and that blew me away.
You know, I'd agree with that one too, and for some reason, and I'm sure this would be another disagreement across the table, like Gabriel with Genesis, I was never a fan of at all, but Gabriel's solo albums, I think, are unbelievably amazing.
I like both. Gabriel hit another level.
He killed it.
I was marginally okay with Gabriel with Genesis, but I don't really like Genesis. I actually went to see him, I fell asleep.
Well, and then the last thing I will say.
That's an expensive
And then Phil Collins, I went to see him and he was worse. I was like, oh.
Yeah. So I have to stick another one on because the latest one is Trent Mahler.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. No, he's a lovely player. I love his
Trent
playing.
Mahler.
Who is it?
TrentMoller. It's German. Minimal.
Anders.
This Trent Mahler, I was listening again to it today. This is just breathtaking music. Wow. Take my breath away.
Yeah, I'll back that one. Really?
I've
really
never heard of it, but it's Trent Mahler.
Trent Mahler.
You know, but Forrest actually brought up a good point, and I know I cut you off, Bobby, and I apologize for that, but it's about, you know, whatever happened to the albums where every song, you know, spoke to you. And what were you going to say about that? You were...
I was just talking about XM, about the technical side of things. XM Radio has a channel now called Vinyl something.
Oh,
Flashback or something. And the stuff really sounds quite good because it's played off of vinyl. It really does sound...
XM happened, man.
Yeah, absolutely. But it is a shame about the quality... Oh, the amount of songs, decent songs you get these days. Right. But, you know, the album is gone.
Selling, the music industry has been selling image. You know, the whole Trevor Horn said it with the Buggles, like, you know, video killed the radio star.
Right.
And I don't want to, I don't want to sound like such a snob, but I guess when it comes to music.
When it comes to music, I've been accused of being a snob. I guess in a sense, it's sort of.
Is that like
just,
T-Pain or anything like that? No.
I do not want to throw up on the table. I'm so sorry. But it's, I remember walking, you know, downtown Pasadena, and I went by these really charming old record shop, CD and record store that I'm praying will still stay open. And they had this big billboard of Shakira's, like, last record, not this one. And she's, if I'm not mistaken, I think she was probably wearing a two-piece bikini or something like
that.
Something. Whatever. Dude, whatever. I so don't care. Oh, my gosh. And all I was thinking was, man, you know, that is not going to make me buy your freaking record.
But it's fun to watch her, though.
No, it's not. I don't. You know what? You have fun. That stuff is annoying. It's annoying to me.
What do you think of Lady Gaga?
I love Lady Gaga.
I don't, but I haven't really heard.
I love all the MSG music. I really do love MSG. I mean,
what's MSG?
MSG like Lady Gaga. Just that, you know, it's like. I mean, have you heard Cascada? Evacuate the dance floor. I mean, just to give you a little clue, 12 point some odd million hits on YouTube. I mean, it's good stuff. I mean, it's well-produced stuff. It's MSG.
But the Lady Gaga thing is the music's okay, but I love the whole presentation.
Right.
The show, the visuals are just out there.
See, that's the whole thing. It's like, nowadays, when I see all
the sensationalization and all the, you know, idolatry, the idolizing, or, you know, it's like it's an automatic turnoff. But the way I got into Madonna in 1990 was I walked in on the live video disc of the Blonde Ambition tour.
Right.
And I was floored. That's what got me into the pop, the whole pop thing, when I was like, okay, she's sitting up, you know, I'm hearing Lucky Star.
Right.
Okay, you hear Lucky Star on the record, and it's all cool. Imagine Lucky Star with Patrick Leonard, who produced Like a Prayer, Immaculate right. Collection, how many other records? Jay Winding, both of those guys on keyboards. Daryl Jones from Weather Report and Sting on bass. Jonathan Sugarfoot Moffitt on drums. James Harrah, who I've... Yeah, and James Harrah, who actually is a good friend of mine and I play with David Garfield around, you know, town and stuff. Actually, he was on the Virgin Tour and on Ciao Italia Live in Italy tours. But that's how I got into that whole deal was I walked in on it and it was like, wow, this stuff is really happening. So I'm sure like if I heard Lady Gaga, you know what I mean?
Right.
It probably would be one of those same things because I really appreciate that. But, you know, 15, 20 years of image has been.
We got to bring Bjork into this.
Bjork. Yes. Well, see, I didn't mention that, yes. But that's part of where my Hammersmith story and Shepherd's Bush Empire comes in, is I was sitting up there going, I'm on the same stage as Kate Bush and Bjork. And, you know, so anyway. Now, the homogenic record is what got me on Bjork,
you know,
too.
It does show, though, is all the types of music are different in the fact that I don't think I'd want to sit down with a Lady Gaga or even certain types of music. I don't necessarily want to sit down and listen to, but some I love to exercise to, some I like right. to yeah, drive to.
Absolutely.
You know, I love, some I like to think deep, more deeper, more the orchestral stuff. Music has so many different flavors.
That's right.
You know, and one I even forgot myself was Sly and the Family Stones.
Right.
When I heard that as a really little good. Kid, I went, that's just fun. I want to move. I want to start, you know.
They were bad.
They were all that energy. It was great.
And, you know, you bring up a good point, though, as far as music hitting you at different times and being in different moods. You know, kind of to tie that in together and what Foros is talking about, you know, as far as the albums where every song is really good. I'd say about 13 years ago, 14 years ago, I was on the Budweiser Superfest, and it was a big R&B tour, and I was with SWV, but Belle Bill DeVoe was on there, and Shy and was on the yeah. Silk. I mean, it was a lot of R&B, Bone Thugs and Harmony. I mean, a lot of R&B and rap. And I was on tour, and I remember walking into Tower Records, and I wanted something so different. I was sick of it, to be perfectly honest, right? And so I'm walking down and I go into the folk section of Tower Records and I just look, I wanted to hear something totally new that I've never heard of. And so I bonsaied a CD. I saw the CD that looked kind of interesting and it had a decent photo, and it was, a group called The Story and Jonathan Brooke in The Story.
I played
and
Jonathan too.
Did okay. you really?
I do.
I played the album and I was not into folk or any of that. And it was just such a great
Jonathan
CD
Brooke, no joke, man.
That since then I've bought every single one of her albums because she's just such a good songwriter. But it was so,
and
it
a
was
great player. Those alternate tunings. Yeah. On guitar. Ooh,
but it was so, the thing was, it was a whole album. And, you know, if I hadn't gone into a store like at Tower Records, and there wouldn't have been CDs for me to be there, I don't know if I would have necessarily had that same opportunity to do that in the download world. Cause I try to do that, but browsing on iTunes is just, it's not quite the same as actually flipping through the records. So it's amazing how, as we're losing the album as a whole piece, you know, there's little experiences like that are slowly going to go away. But, you know, like Scott was saying, though, music is definitely getting more compartmentalized because now you can search by genre and you can search by BPM and all kinds of different things and pull up not just an album but several songs from several different things.
Can I ask something real quickly? I'm
sure,
sorry.
Sure.
I have to go in a second. About the dream situation, here's one. I went to this was around 96, 97, walked into a store called CD Exchange in the Buckhead section of Atlanta, Georgia, and saw this CD. Sometimes I'm just sort of drawn to these CDs for no reason, really. And I picked up this one CD, Jonathan Brooke, 10 Cent Wings. I looked at the back, you know, cover, and it's like, okay, she just looks, I don't know, she looks serious. She looks, you know, and it was just from the back, right? And so I'm looking at the back of her head, and something just said, man, you know, check this out. I put it on the first track, Secrets and Lies started, and I was like, oh, my goodness. I took the CD home, was completely possessed by this CD, went, got everything I heard by her. 1997, she comes around, plays the Borders Bookstore in Atlanta. This was at the time when a lot of the folk singers, different singer-songwriters, were going and doing Borders tours. You guys remember that?
Right.
It's like late 90s. And I stood out in the hot sun with two Story CDs, and I think I had three of her solo CDs. Waited in line. She signed my CDs, and she was all, and I could tell she was a bit surprised. I walk over, she's like, wow, you have, wow, the early stuff. And she signs, you know, Angel in the House and
right.
Plum and all this stuff. And, you know, and I thought that she probably figured, okay, well, you should probably, I figure you probably like hip hop or something, like, you know, or whatever. But I had all her stuff. Went, saw her the next night at Smith's Soul Bar, right? So, one day I was at a rehearsal doing, I was doing a rehearsal with a singer-songwriter, local singer-songwriter here in L.A. The bass player was a guy, Nick Sample. He didn't do the gig, but we just did the rehearsal. Later on, he says, hey, I'd like for you to meet my father. Turns out his father's Joe Sample. Then I met Joe Sample. And then I'm really breezing, trying to breeze through this. Well, Joe Sample's and Joe Sample and the Crusaders, all those guys, the manager is Pat Rains, okay, who managed like the Go-Go's and, you know, Pretenders and countless others over time. And then right after that, Nick calls and says, hey, you know, I have a gig, you know, you might be interested in doing. You know, Jonathan Brooks going to need a drummer. Her drummer can't make the whatever gig. So, of course, I'm sitting up here jaw wide open. And he said, yeah, I remember you saying you like Jonathan Brooks. I'm like, yeah, like really love Jonathan Brooks. Right. So then I meet her. So I this dream of, you know, listening to Abe Laborio Jr. play drums on her stuff and just really loving her music. I'm sitting up there, and here I am rehearsing with Jonathan Brooks, and she's giving me background vocal parts. I have it on my iPod recorded. And then finally one day I said, Jonathan, do you remember me from, you know, what was that, 2007?
No.
From five, six, seven years ago with you signing my CDs. Would you happen to? And she looked up and kind of went, you know, that's probably why you look so familiar.
So yeah, you're the guy who got the restraining order.
So that was kind of like a dream.
No,
that
is
true for me, because I really wanted to play with
it. You know what? That's a great story. And on that, you know, we're gonna have to be wrapping it up here. But I just want to thank everybody for surviving another year of the podcast. I'd like to thank Alexa for joining us here.
Thank you so much, guys.
And I'd like to thank Keith for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
And, you know, to be honest, the best thing that was said tonight was actually said off mic, off the air, by Keith. And that was during the break when he was talking about the fact that, you know, all of us here were glowing when we were beaming when we were talking about the dream. And I thought that was pretty profound, because, you know, we have all our ups and downs, but I'm just glad that I can make a living being, you know, in something I'm totally into, you know, with audio.
To play.
Yeah, it's really great. And I, as I look back, you know, I'm really thankful for having the opportunity. I'm thankful for all you guys for joining
me on
the podcast. And so, Keith, thank you so much for keeping it in perspective for us.
Fantastic.
All right.
Yeah, we're in a great business.
That is. All right. And before we go, why don't we really quick, Rob, are you doing anything interesting you want to talk about? What are you working on?
We're doing a lot of interesting things, a bunch of music projects, but actually the only thing I think I can talk about right now is yeah, it's often like that. No, part of what we've been doing a lot more of is television and film mixing at my place, because we have multiple studios, so we're putting them to good use.
Great.
Let them earn their keep, as it were, and we're in the process of doing the whole campaign for Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs coming to home video.
Great.
And if I'm to believe the 12,000 commercials, I believe January 5th is when it's available. But it's been really cool to get some of this kind of work in. It also opens the doors to get music into some new avenues that we would not necessarily have a direct line into, but if you're mixing and doing the sound design and everything else, a lot of times the producers will say, hey, you got any music that might fit this? You say, absolutely, let me look in the library. And then as soon as they leave, you hire a band, bring them in, and write something. But so that's been a lot of fun, but also working on a bunch of music. We're actually simultaneously working on 6 different albums that I'll be able to talk about after the new year.
Great. Maybe. Bobby, what about you? What
are
you
looking at? We're actually doing a couple of things. I'll tell you the first thing, because you guys sort of know John Baxter. Remember Baxter?
Yeah.
He was a guest.
Yep.
Well, his mate of mine, his mate actually as well, is out from England, came out yesterday, a drummer, Justin Hildreth. You may know him. He's played on all Thomas Dolby stuff, Flat Earth.
Oh, great.
Blinded. He did. He's a great drummer.
Wow.
Nina, he's playing with a lot of people. Anyway, I'm cutting him. He's at my place. Starting tomorrow afternoon, we're setting up, and for 2 days we're going to cut drums there for Baxter's new record set.
Did you say Nina?
Nina Hagen, sorry.
Oh.
Okay.
99.
Yeah. But I think he did play with her too.
No. The only reason why I said that is because I was talking to a friend of mine, actually Mike, who was a guest from last week.
Yes.
He was talking, and we mentioned that song, 99 Left Balloons, and he goes, I'll give you $1,000, you can tell me who sang that. And I said, Nina. And he was like, yeah, and you didn't let me finish, and who was the drummer?
Yeah.
And I'm like, so that would have been hilarious.
You're trying to get $1,000 bucks.
I know.
You?
Keith, what about you? What are you working on? You're working on the piece. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, it's, as I mentioned earlier, it's about global warming, climate change. Not a lot more to say about that at the moment. You know,
and is it a self-produced thing, or are you going to...
I don't know who's going to mix it yet. Chris Bobby's arm, yeah.
I would. He's my bud, of course. But, it's 4 hours long, though. I don't know if there's even another podcast this year.
Exactly. Well, please keep us updated on that through Bobby. Yeah,
let's listen to it twice. And then we'll do tomorrow.
Well, when they buy one track, they buy one album.
70 minutes each one.
Well, you know, but you can tell it's a passion project, and there's always something great about listening to music that comes from the heart and passionate. So good luck, and thank you very much. Bill, what about you? What are you?
I just got done with a writing session from a friend from Hamburg came over, and his name is Chris Control, and he's got kind of opposite skill set of me, and I can make his stuff mean, and he can make my stuff melodic, and so we wrote a bunch of stuff and slotted it over some library guys who were working on a Disney thing, some Science Channel thing.
Great.
And still trying to get my head around Bobby's phase comments last week.
Just by the way, a couple of people asked me, I won't interrupt you, but it is related. Kyle, a buddy of mine, he's a great composer. He's going to come to town. He may want to pop and sit. And he always listens to our podcast. And he said, dude, please explain that. Why don't we do it one more time, explaining the phasing? And I know we had a couple of things going on. So we could do a proper demonstration. I'll put a little audio file up on the side or something.
Yeah, we'll have to do that. Yeah. That's a great idea.
I actually called Bobby this week to ask him.
Exactly. And I figured out what it is. It's not interleave files. He's working with splits.
Yeah.
So anyway, and then going to do some more Ableton tips and tricks for this Mac Pro video. And I'm loading up my laptop. I'm going up to Colorado for the holidays and try to write a bunch of new music that means something to me.
Great.
Good for you.
Brandon, what about you?
Nothing new at work since last week. Still working on Alice in Wonderland. But at home, I'm starting to, this week, finally have some time to work on a new solo music project. So.
Great.
Yeah. I don't know what it's going to be yet. Just making noise.
Okay. Forrest, how about yourself?
I'm in rehearsals right now with Utada, U-T-A-D-A, for those you didn't know. And she's getting ready after over sales of 52 million copies of, records and everything. She's going to find, and that's in Japan, throughout Asia, different parts of the world. Born and raised in New York City, she's finally going to embark upon her first official U.S. and U.K. promo tour, and that's kicking off mid-January through mid-February, possibly other things being added on. So that's what's going on right now.
So we won't have you for a couple weeks then. You'll be out there. Well, good for
you. Trying to make it happen.
That's great.
It's always a good thing when you're away from the podcast.
Work is good, especially these days.
Alexia.
Thank you for asking. Okay, my triple album, Ruby, is being released in Greece this month. And I'm in communication with Real World Music to sign a contract there.
Wow.
For all my music, my improvisations,
good
and my
you.
Jazz albums.
That's great.
So,
it's lovely.
Thank you very much for asking. Thanks for tonight, guys.
Hey, thank you for joining us.
Yeah.
Scott, how about yourself?
I started a movie in March, and we're still mixing it. Season of the Witch, and we did a pass yesterday. We're testing it tonight in Vegas, so the other part of me is in Vegas somewhere. and we'll see. You know, we're trying to finish the film. I've got a lot of things. I'm starting a new film in January. And I think what I'm trying to do, I try to do this several times a year, or at least once a year, is to stop and listen again. Because a lot of times we have our sets of tricks where we know we can get a sound really quickly and we know use this. And we get into a form of a routine. So I know all the plugins and how I would approach something. The problem is sometimes I feel like I just do it all the time, so now I want to try to change it up. So I try to stop, listen, go through the gear again, see what I like, see why I liked it, see what I didn't like. You know, I could spend a week on the Eventide H1000, and just going through all my outboard gear, my hardware, vocoders, what vocoders do I like, listen to the EQs, and just start experimenting some more and see what new colors and textures they do. So, and new gear, I'm learning Logic. I want to learn Ableton. you know, I just want to, you know, just jump into technology, get up to speed, and just do some exploring in ways that, you know, I haven't been able to.
That's great.
Woodshedding.
What about you, Mikey?
Well, you know, I'll just throw this out there. As much as we've been talking about music and loving music, right now I am not in a making music mood. And I've kind of lost, I don't know if you've ever been through this, but I've kind of lost that, you know, I sit down on the
nothing
keyboard and nothing's coming out, and I don't like any of the sounds. And sometimes you want to be creative. Creative people want to create, but sometimes, you know, you just got to step away from some things and do something else and let your brain kind of go that
sometimes
direction.
Sometimes it's good to stop.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, I would literally last week I came into my studio and I was going to try to work on music, and it just felt forced and just nothing. I felt like, you know what? I felt like itchy. I just felt really uncomfortable, and I just didn't have anything in, like, I should be inspired, but I wasn't. And then I just opened up my Final Cut and I did some editing. I'm like, okay, I'm into this right now. So that's what I'm kind of doing. So it's kind of fun. Sometimes you need to step away. Well, hey, gang, if you have any questions or comments you want to reach us, you can always catch us on our Facebook page, and you can also email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. That's audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And once again, I want to thank Alexa for joining us and Keith for joining us on our podcast. And gang, that's it until next year. So everybody have a happy holiday. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. Thank you for listening to the Audio Podcast. For myself and all the guys here, we'll see you next year. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and Westwave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaulo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I do not want to throw up on the table. I'm so sorry.